This is Writers' Voices, Cheryl Fusco Johnson, subbing for Monica Hadley and her mother, Carolyn, and I'm pleased to announce that with me today is Robert Boyer and his wife, Connie. They've just completed a new book called Heart and Mind. Robert has previously done three books and also is a clinical psychologist who practiced for many years here in Fairfield, Iowa. And Connie has been a city councilwoman, is currently no longer doing that, but served the community for many years. And now together they're running an inn called Seven Roses. And I think they have an interesting story about how they got the name for their inn. But let me just welcome Bob and Connie. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Would one of you like to tell us the story how you got the name Seven Roses for your inn?
Of course. When Bob and I met, the first time he ever gave me flowers, he gave me seven roses. And, of course, you know, when you're thinking of a new name of a new business, you think of all kinds of crazy names. But somehow we started talking about flowers, and we came with that thought of the first time he gave me roses, he gave me seven roses. And we used the yellow rose because it signifies friendship. And thought of the people that come to the B&B are all friends that we just haven't met yet. And that really seems to be true. We've met so many wonderful people that we do consider new friends. And it's been a real joy.
Well, that's great. So I see the title of your new book is Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union. And that sort of seems to fit in with the theme of romance and roses. And could you tell us a little about how you decided to do this book together? This is your first project together, is that right?
Yes.
That's correct.
I had written a previous book called Cool Mind, Warm Heart, How to Communicate with Body, Mind, Heart, and Soul. And it was written on the basis of a style of a how-to book for communication skills training. And it's very concise, very strongly structured. And I wrote it because a lot of people said they're very interested in developing their communication skills, don't feel they have such good communication skills, but don't want to have a lot of material to read that isn't quite to the point. They wanted something very concise, very tightly structured, some simple examples, and that led to this well-organized book that I think is very useful, How to Guide to Communication.
That was somewhat of an outgrowth from your practice as a clinical psychologist?
Definitely, yeah. And from that, Connie and I thought that maybe we should develop these ideas a little bit further in a format that was more entertaining for people, because people love to be entertained. And so from that, Connie thought, well, maybe we could combine some of the ideas about communication skills, which definitely relate to the integration of heart and mind, and then use classic films that illustrate these principles really beautifully. And from that, we worked to pick out about 20 classic films that we thought represented these issues really nicely. And then we decided that this was the format that we would use for this book. So Heart and Mind is an integration of love and duty, heart and mind, into a deeper wholeness of experience of life. And it integrates the idea of love and respect and appreciation, love and duty, illustrated with classic films. And Connie brought a lot of fun to the whole project.
But one of the things that I want to point out, the reason we used films was because many years ago, Bob had told me that with working with clients, sometimes he would recommend that people see the movie Groundhog Day. And if you think about that story, Bill Murray plays, you know, the main character, and he's really rough and gruff at the beginning of the movie, and of course, there's certain things he wants in his life. He's attracted to his coworker, Andy McDowell. I forget what her name is in the movie, but you know, she's not attracted to him because he's rough and he's not very nice. And so, what happens every day? He has to get up the same day and relive it. And as he relives that day, day after day after day, he learns skills that are more balanced within himself. And then he eventually gets what he wants, which is the girl. And, you know, so I found that fascinating that when he worked with clients, particularly, I mean, obviously, I suppose, and maybe he can explain this a little better, the clients that were sort of out of balance in that area, maybe one person being more aggressive and one person being, you know, a little bit too passive and not being assertive. So it teaches people how to be more assertive in their speaking and in their actions.
Yeah, in that story, it's a beautiful story of how a person moves from being overly aggressive and pushy to being able to settle back in to oneself a little bit more. The character does that and begins to appreciate that in order to be effective in communicating his desires, wishes, and hopes to others, and to be charming in doing that and respectful of others, he needs to move from more of an aggressive stance to an assertively balanced stance. And I think that's a core feature of that movie, and it's beautifully portrayed. And that's one of the movies we use in the book.
So did you? So what you're telling me is you decided to take this other very how-to approach book and use some of that same sort of information in Heart and Mind, but package it in a way that it's a little bit easier for people to grasp?
Well, not so much easier to grasp, because I think Cool Mind, Warm Heart is a fairly simple reading. It's just that it puts it in the context, perhaps, of not a how-to book, but an entertaining book that captures some of those principles.
I see. I did find that I was able to spend some time with the book this weekend, and I did find, like, reading some of the passages that are a little bit more of the how-to part and then having a description of a movie that illustrates that point was really useful. And just reading the plots of the movies was almost like watching the movies again, so I thought that was a nice device. So you originally came up with that idea of having these sort of illustrations for movies for your clients in your practice, and then you came up with the idea of putting it in the book. Is that right?
Well, I was using films sometimes in my practice.
Did you think about using that in the book?
Or was
that
no, like one of Connie Connie's, really Connie's brought ideas? That.
So Marriage of the Minds, it seems like that worked out really well.
Heart and Mind connected.
Heart and Mind, yeah. Now, yeah, Connie, had you had any other experience with writing before you wrote this book?
No, not really.
So no poetry?
It's only in my mind. It's only in my mind that I think of one day spending more time writing. But
she has developed some ideas for some further books, though.
In fact, I couldn't sleep last night, so I was up about 1 o'clock doing some research on the internet.
Well, for your next project.
That's
know,
right.
Might as well put it to good
exactly
use.
Exactly right.
So how did this process of collaboration work? Because it's a little different writing a book, I'm sure, by yourself than it is probably to collaborate with someone else.
Well, one of the first things we did was really research movies. I mean,
that sounds fun.
Yeah, we had, of course, a list of movies, some of my favorites, some of his favorites, some that we knew that were just classic movies that had this dynamic going on. For example, Casablanca. You know, there's a love story in it, but there's also duty to country, which each of those characters had. And there were some movies. So then we began watching movies and taking notes. And it was interesting because we would find in the movies maybe a certain line that was really important that we hadn't really heard before. Or we heard it in a different way. So it was interesting to watch it with that much intention versus just mm-hmm. being entertained. And, you know, there were some movies we said, no, that didn't work, or it was too rough, or too much killing in it. And, you know, we wanted to be a little bit more balanced in the movies.
Reach a wide audience.
Yeah, and to have nice stories. You know, some stories are very tragic in some ways. And so we tried to minimize the tragic stories, if you will.
There are a couple, Camelot and Romeo and Juliet, that are stories in the book that we summarize. And they're quite tragic stories that are harsh lessons about the lack of integration of heart and mind. But most of them are more upbeat than that, although those are such classic stories and beautiful stories that we thought it'd be appropriate to include them too.
Okay, so you had the idea for the book, sort of like a joint, that Marriage of the Minds, that you're going to do this book. You decided to start with the movie, so you've narrowed it down to 20 movies that you think are really inspirational and illustrate your points, and then what was the next step?
Well, then Bob kind of took over, I would say, and really started doing the writing because he has a little more time than I do as far as daytime, so because I'm still working full-time job. So, you know, he really was putting thoughts to paper for both of us, and you know, after he would do writing, then I would look at it and I'd give him some suggestions and try to bring out some of the points that maybe were in the communication skills book and say, you know, I think we need this particular area, like I remember saying, we need something about problem solving in there a little bit more. And so that's kind of how it went.
Would he show you, like, write a chapter and then you would read it and give input? Is that how you'd work it?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. We'd go back and forth. And sometimes we'd talk through something and there was a good-sized section in one of the chapters that she thought maybe was a little bit too abstract for this particular book. And so we decided not to include that. And then other themes that she thought should be included. I tried to add a version, and then she would look at it and modify it as she felt needed to improve it, make it a little bit more easy to follow or accessible and complete.
Were there any rough spots in collaborating, or was it all smooth sailing? Like, for example, when you were narrowing it down to 20 movies, did you have to advocate for your movie?
I don't think so much in the movie area, but there were a couple places where in the book where he would use, where I felt like I had to, I'm going to say, dumb it down. He's such an intellectual writer that, you know, again, I wanted this to be entertaining and that anybody could pick it up and enjoy it and read it. And so I didn't want it to be,
well,
to get too heady.
Easily accessible is probably what you're groping
exactly.
for. Yeah.
So she kind of knocked me around a little bit, and I grew up.
That sounds like the collaboration worked out well. You're still here.
Yeah, so anyway. But, you know, working on it at 10, 11 o'clock at night, I would not advise for most people. If you're going to do this, that's when we probably had the most challenges, is when we were both too tired.
Oh, because that's the time you had to be together to work on
it. Yeah, yeah. So we tried not to do that too much, or at least I did. And, of course, I think each time we got into that late at night, we challenged ourselves a little bit.
And part of the time that we were working on this book, Connie was on city council, and a lot of it was written after that time, but part of it we were conceiving of and working on it then. And with the other obligations of the bed and breakfast, her work at the bank, other
and
things.
And being a mom, even though the children are grown.
And now the grandchildren, she loves to spend time with them. All that adds up to a very busy period of time. And that was challenging and sometimes frustrating, because there might be extended periods when we couldn't sit down and really kind of collaborate on the
and
book.
And you do emphasize the importance of rest in this book.
Yeah.
So, let's see, we talked about your collaboration, your movie selection. Who do you see as the audience for this book?
Well, we hope everyone. A general audience. It has some profundity and depth to it, and it has a psychological component that deals with levels of mind, and we think that's important in understanding, trying to narrow down clearly where in the inner levels of the psyche, you know, we can identify the relationship between heart and mind. And then what are their basic functions? How do they differ and how are they similar? These are key aspects that we think, or I particularly think, but I think Connie would agree, wouldn't you?
Sure, Bob.
help clarify how to put together what we have called the pull of love in the heart and the kind of the push of duty and responsibility in the mind. And so you don't get pushed and pulled apart, that they integrate better.
I think in books, the beginning and ending are especially important. And I think you could help explain to our listeners sort of one of the major points of the book is by explaining why you chose Casablanca to start with. Like, that was the first movie you discussed, so why is that?
Well, you want to?
No, you go ahead.
For one thing, it's the classic story.
Many people will have seen it.
Yes, and it represents so clearly the challenges that people have in trying to integrate their heart and mind. Responsibilities of duty to country and the world that were significantly at threat at that time. And also the depth of connection and love that the main characters felt with each other, and the complications that feed in from those two aspects of the push and pull of heart and mind.
So you feel this is a universal challenge for people.
Yeah, and it's a relatively short story to describe, and we left out some details, but maybe you could read it.
Well, yeah, we can. But I also wanted to add a point on the previous question of the audience. You know, this book is self-published, and when you do self-publishing and you are choosing where it's going to go within, like, Amazon.com, we chose the self-help category primarily because, you know, this... I think the person who really wants to read this and is really going to be interested in it and get a lot of value of it is the person who really wants to learn more skills for themselves, how to balance their life better. Maybe they have some challenges in their life. And, you know, many times that pushes us into a learning mode mm-hmm. is when we have challenges in one form or another. So maybe that, you know, that helps clarify a little bit where the audience is potentially. I mean, you know, all of us are working in different ways in this area. But what I find is generally when people are really, really open to learning about themselves is when they
people
have challenges.
Seeking knowledge.
Correct.
This may put you on the spot because you might need to think about it, but you can think about it for a few minutes and come back later with an answer. But oftentimes when you're visiting one of those sites, they'll say, if you liked this book, then we suggest this book. So what other books would you think people who would like your book would have on their reading list?
Oh, that's
Cool Mind, Warm Heart.
Which is another book by my guest today is Robert Boyer, and he's here with his wife, Connie. We're discussing Heart and Mind, which is their fourth book. Bob's done three previously by himself. It's Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union. This is Writer's Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, subbing for Monica Hadley, and you're listening to 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield and beyond. Okay, so
I was just going to say that's an interesting question, and I wish I would have thought about it before
I
got
it
here.
But, a little.
But I have to say, the one thing that jumps out in my mind is, you know, 20 years ago, yeah, approximately, when I was going through a more difficult time, I read the book Dance of Anger, and I can't tell you who the author is, I don't remember, but it was a book about being angry and how to get over some of those humps.
This is before we met. Just
yeah, right. Good point. Yeah, this is before we met.
Having read a lot of this book, I would have to say it's not so much, this is maybe a progression from that book, because this isn't a book about being angry.
No, it isn't.
It's a book about being conflicted, trying to decide whether to follow the heart or follow the mind and how to resolve that conflict.
Right, but The Dance of Anger was about having that confliction of being angry about whatever's going on in your life and how to get over those humps and get through it, you know, because nobody wants to be angry all the time. And I just, at that time, had a lot of issues coming up, and I couldn't seem to get rid of them. And in essence, I wasn't balanced. I wasn't balanced with those thoughts, and probably some of my behaviors were not balanced either, because I was probably projecting anger on some people that, you know, that didn't deserve it. So, again, they're kind of different, but that's kind of what comes to my mind.
So we talked a little bit about beginnings, and then, as I was saying, I think beginnings and endings in books are really significant. So would you tell us a little about the movie you chose to end with and why you made that selection?
Go ahead.
The inevitable challenge in daily life that people have involves trying to reconcile opposing forces. And in this book, we characterize those opposing forces in terms of heart and mind. And in popular society today, even, it's very common to emphasize one or the other. There are people who are very more intellectual and emphasize mind, and there are people that are more emotional that emphasize heart more. And it's popular in coaching and counseling these days to be able to hear something like follow your heart or follow your bliss. And we think that's a great thing to do, but can be misleading and can lead to emotional reasoning, which doesn't integrate deep level of feeling with thinking. The idea of love and attraction to respect and duty and responsibility. And that pattern of making decisions on the basis of kind of outer emotions rather than deep feeling and deep thinking, we think is something that's not quite balanced in society today. And but inevitably, no matter how well you integrate heart and mind, at some point, even if it's all good heart and all good mind, even the most profound thinking and the most profound feeling, there's still this sometimes feeling of gap, of lack of integration of what to do. And we found a story that we think captures that better than any other story so far, and that's the story that's drawn from the Bhagavad Gita. And it's a story where a very profound person who was a warrior of his time, deeply steeped in the responsibilities of his duties to protect people and others because of his love for them. And in his situation, that duty led to his situation of having to actually consider fighting people he loved, his relatives, his friends. And it was a deep, challenging situation for him. He had a tremendous amount of love for these people, and also a tremendous amount of commitment in his mind to his responsibility. And so that movie, that film, that story, there are a couple of films on it, but that story captures what we think are the highest values of heart and mind, very positive development of duty and responsibility, very positive development of love and appreciation for others. And even in that extreme situation of complete positivity of both, not the opposing forces of so much evil and good, although that's definitely captured in this story. But even in the situation where in yourself, full development of heart, full development of mind, or pretty much near full development, sometimes still doesn't integrate. And the need is to go beyond even the deepest values of mind and the deepest values of heart, to, as it were, transcend that duality entirely. And that's the basis for the deep integration toward a perfect union of heart and mind, which is what we try to capture in this book.
So, Connie, would you like to share a little of reading us a little excerpt from the book? Do you have some selection?
Well, we could read Casablanca, because it's just a short story, actually, if you think we have time here.
Absolutely. And so one of the points of having you read this is to explain the essence of what this book is about, which is that conflict between heart and mind. So this will be a reminder for people who haven't seen the movie for a while.
And how to resolve that conflict.
Right. So this movie actually was released in 1942. And for those movie buffs, it was directed by Michael Curtis. I'm not sure how to say his name. At any rate, Casablanca is the name of an exotic city in North African French Morocco. It was a strategic location during the occupation of France by the German Nazis around the time of World War II. Sympathizers of French refugees secretly helped provide passage through Casablanca to Lisbon, Portugal, and then to safety in America. The hero of the story, Rick Blaine, was an adventurous, romantic American bachelor living in Paris. The heroine of the story, Ilse Lund, was a beautiful, high-minded Norwegian lady. Ilse was married to Victor Laszlo, a very courageous man who was a well-known dissident leader, but the marriage was kept secret for their protection. When Ilse received the terrible news that Victor had lost his life trying to escape from a Nazi concentration camp, she deeply grieved and became very lonely. It was during this time that she first happened to meet Rick Blaine. They quickly fell in love and planned to leave Paris together in order to avoid the German Nazi invasion. But then Ilse received word that Victor was still alive and was calling for her. Terribly saddened by having to abandon Rick, but honoring her obligations, she wrote a note asking Rick to forgive her, unable for their safety to reveal why she could not go with him. As the German Nazi tanks rolled into Paris, Rick left on the last train, alone, without his love, and not knowing why she failed to show up at the train to go with him. He left Paris heartbroken, confused, and embittered. Rick settled in Casablanca. He started a nightclub that became popular and resigned himself to a melancholic life of never seeing his love again and never knowing why. Ilse remained hiding in Paris with her husband Victor, who by now had become an international symbol of freedom for his resistance to the Nazis. But when it became too dangerous for them in Nazi-occupied France, they sought to escape to the United States. As fate would have it, their escape route went through Casablanca. Inevitably, Ilse crossed paths again with Rick. When Rick and Ilse see each other again, their hearts open to each other once more. But both also realize that circumstances were very different when they were together back in Paris. They struggle to reconcile their hearts' deep love for each other and their minds' deep sense of duty. Both know that Ilse is married to Victor, and also that Victor is a very important symbol of freedom and resistance to the spreading Nazi tyranny. Ilse confides that it is too difficult for her to decide what to do, and that Rick must decide for them both. Rick rises to his duty in one of the most poignant scenes of all the great films. Rick schemes to have Ilse and her husband, Victor, evade the Nazi Gestapo and fly out of Casablanca to freedom. As Rick and Ilse see each other their final time, deep longing for a different fate shows in their tender expressions. But also, they recognize the duty and higher purpose in their lives at that crucial time in history. They accept their destiny with profound appreciation of the deeper and more expanded meaning of love and duty in their lives.
So we've just heard an excerpt from the book Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union, and it was read by the co-author, Connie Boyer, and her husband Bob is with us as well today. This is Writer's Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, subbing for Monica Hadley and her mom, Carolyn, and we're at 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield and beyond. So that story illustrates very concretely the conflict that can exist between heart and mind. Do you have any more comments on that, Bob, having heard it?
Well, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, Connie, about what's the story named? The Kansas?
The Wizard of Oz?
The Wizard of Oz, yeah, it slipped my mind. And there's a beautiful phrase in that story that captures a depth of understanding of heart and mind that goes, it's probably as profound as any of these stories at all. And you wouldn't expect it in The Wizard of Oz, but it's definitely there. And has to do with what the wizard says?
Yes. Well, at the end of the book, well, everyone knows the story because we've all watched it 100 times, right? Each character has something that they feel is missing within them. The lion doesn't have courage, and the straw man doesn't have a heart. The tin man doesn't have a heart, and the straw man doesn't have a brain. And so after the wizard tells them to go get the witch's broom, and they come back and they're ready and waiting to get what they feel that they deserve. And the wizard is going, talking to each one of them, and he gets to the tin man. And he says, oh, yes, a heart. You wanted a heart. And he said, you know, a heart will never be practical until it's unbreakable. And when the wizard said that, I looked at Bob and said, oh, we have to write that down. Because it really captures this idea that, you know, our hearts are so tender in life. And there's in daily life, you know, we have all these things that affect our heart. And our mind sometimes has to tell our heart, you need to do this, or you need to do this in a way that's respectful of others. And the reality is that our heart, once we've become an enlightened being, if you will, and we have the ultimate balance, then our hearts won't be breakable because we'll be complete bliss.
And then the conflict will be not a conflict anymore,
right,
between
exactly.
heart and mind.
Exactly.
So the point of this book, as I understand it, was to help people understand how to resolve the conflict between heart and mind. And what would you say are some of your bits of advice that you're offering people in the book as to how to resolve that conflict?
Part 2 of the book focuses on that issue. part one kind of captures how do we understand where heart and mind is in our psyche, and what are their major functions? And so those are the two issues, like where is heart and mind, and how do they work? How do they relate to each other? And that's kind of the first part of the book. And the second part is, what are some practical things we can do that might help them work better together? So that's the focus of the second part. And in there's much discussion about communication skills and some practical examples and specific skills taken from Cool Mind, Warm Heart that provide a basis for being able to have the tools to reconcile heart and mind on a better level. But again, ultimately, all of those tools will be useful and useful and useful more and more as one refines heart and mind, but eventually even the full development of heart and mind need to transcend that whole level of duality of nature. And so that's what we think is ultimately the most useful tool. There are many practical steps that are useful in addition to that.
Could you give us?
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about the levels of the levels of energy from outside to inside, as we've outlined in the book, because that really sometimes clarifies for people where things lie.
Well, that gets a little bit more into Cool Mind, Warm Heart, because that book is structured in terms of if you saw a person at a distance, as you start to approach them, there are certain things about them you can notice, you can observe and attend to. And first you see their body language and their postures and movements, and then maybe their facial expressions, and then the tone of their voice, and then eventually the content of what they're saying, and maybe deeper kind of emotional feeling level, and the thoughts, and then the very, very fine feeling level that's deep within them, and then who they are as an individual and who they ultimately are as a universal individual. And these are, in terms of levels of mind, a framework of models of levels of mind. And in Cool Mind, Warm Heart, there are specific skills, there's 36 skills that I've talked about in the book, that lay out from being able to attend better to body language, to hearing a little bit more what emotions are going on in the person, and then being able to settle down a little bit further to the rational thinking framework of the mind, the mind level of mind, you might say, the thinking level of mind, and then hopefully going deeper to the deep feeling level, what we call the psychological heart, and then maybe even deeper than that to the individual ego and perhaps the universal value of ego and self, the universal self. And how do we go how do we use skills, what skills are useful for being able to move deeper and deeper and deeper, helping the person that we're interacting with settle into themselves more, and which helps us settle into ourselves more. And then the communication is firstly on maybe an introductory level in terms of what's going on with their emotions and how to help those emotions settle down, and then to deeper thinking level and what's the rational conceptualization of how to problem solve and think through things. And when there's some success at that, settling down to a deeper feeling of respect and mutual appreciation between each other, and a feeling of love and a super fluid feeling of connectedness to each other emerges from that. And that's the basis for being able to develop goals together. What do we want to accomplish? What are our goals? And then come out together into how do we accomplish the goals. So the heart is in terms of what do we want to do? What do we want to be? Even deeper, who do we want to be in terms of our individual sense of ego? And then going out together as we have settled into this deep level of connection, this superfluid level of feeling level between people, and moving out together to problem solve together and come up with solutions together to implement in action that are infused with love and appreciation, but also respect for each other and the environment that we live in. This is the general model that we propose in this book.
And it seems to me as though this model does not apply just to like couple relationships. You're talking about communication of people in all levels, like, for example, on the city council, or how do people reach goals no matter what they're doing, not just in a marriage or a...
And even communication within oneself.
And I would just like to add that, you know, there's a simple model, which he kind of, that he alluded to, but I'd like to even simplify it a little more, and that is, you know, at the heart level, we think, what do we want to do, which he mentioned, you know, what's our desire? So there, that's where our heart is speaking. And then our brain says, okay, our heart says we want to do this. And so the brain says, okay, how can we do that? What do we do to accomplish that goal? And then the brain, its job is to think through the most appropriate way to accomplish that goal. And then you can act on it in an appropriate manner. And so it's important to use the brain while you're to make those decisions about what the heart's desire is, so that you are respectful of others and respectful of yourself and respectful to the environment around us. And we see that on so many levels. We can talk about that from, you know, a simple relationship between a couple, where let's say, what's a complaint that from the women that the guys take their socks off and they put it next to the hamper, but they don't put it in the hamper. Well, the woman can then yell at the husband, right, and say, you know, why can't you put the socks in the hamper? Or she can explain to him, you know, I really appreciate it if you would put the socks in the hamper, so all I have to do is pick up the bag and go to the laundry, or, you know, whatever she wants to say, but in a nice way and in an appropriate way, versus just coming at him with anger where he might reject it. Whereas if he understands why she wants it that way, maybe he can do it that way. So that's a very simple example to,
has some autobiographical significance.
Yeah, right. but, you know, we can take, you know, a political situation, you know, a corporate situation. I mean, there's so many levels of that. But it's the mind's duty to help the heart do its desire, but do it appropriately, that
responsibly.
And responsibly.
Well, speaking of heart's desire, so I'd like to talk a little about your heart's desire for this book. And let me remind our listeners that we're talking about Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union, which was co-authored by Robert and Connie Boyer. And this is Writer's Voices. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, subbing for Monica Hadley, who's not able to be with us today. She's the normal host. But let's get back to the heart's desire of the authors who are with us today. So what are your goals for this book, and what are you doing to fulfill those goals in terms of getting your message out to people? How are you encouraging people to buy your book? We know that this is the big issue that faces self-publishing authors. It's a way that many more people are following than have done this in the past. It's more viable today than it used to be. But you still have to somehow distribute your book, somehow get it out to people.
Right.
So what are you doing?
Well, I would say we're at the baby stages of that. You know, we've done a little bit locally. We've done a couple radio shows, you know, the normal press releases and articles that just for local folks. We are working on website, and we do have some plans to outreach some bigger names, some, if you will, famous names in the TV industry, that people that work with other people on this level, that help people with challenges that they have in their life. And you know, we're hoping that it can get that far.
And we're thinking of names of people to send copies to, complimentary copies. Hope they'll look at it and see that it has value.
So I have to ask you this, Bob, because I know you've been a clinical psychologist. Could you see yourself as a TV personality giving advice? Like that's not your
actually,
heart's desire?
I guess they'd have to say no. I would like to speak about this and the content of other books that I have been working
on. Yes, tell us what your other, because I think you've mentioned this one and the previous one, but there's two we haven't heard about at all. So what else have you written?
May I say that the idea of kind of displaying private counseling in a... medium such as TV is not something that's high on my list as a thing that I have a lot of appreciation and respect for.
Yeah, one always wonders. I'm sure people, the audience of the shows, probably learn a lot, but one always wonders what happens to the people whose problems are being aired in such a public way, you know, if it's really useful for them or not.
One wonders.
Okay, but do tell us about your other two books.
Well, the first book I wrote was kind of what I really wanted to say, and it's a scholarly treatise about consciousness and quantum theory and unified field theory and neuroscience, and it's like nearly 600 pages. It's a huge
Was this a,
tome.
An academic?
It's called Bridge to Unity, Unified Field-Based Science and Spirituality. And it tries to go within the framework of modern science very deeply into the issues that aren't yet resolved, and that ancient holistic understanding of these things can link together and provide a coherent view of the universe, a worldview, a holistic view that is not based on reductive, fundamentally random notions of the origin of the universe, and that get translated into views of the meaningless of the fundamental meaninglessness of life, existential dead end. These have been ideas that have been very prominent in intellectual circles for the last 100 years, and many of them emerge from key findings in modern science that relate to the most successful theories in modern science, like quantum theory, relativity theory, and evolution theory.
So this was your first book. What year did that come out?
2008.
Oh, so this is a pretty recent phenomenon for you doing this writing.
Yeah, well, I started working on these things many years ago. Actually, the conception for this first book came in 1971, so it took me a while to what I feel build up enough understanding and appreciation for a holistic view of the world to be able to articulate it well enough, and it required a lot of reading, a lot of study, even in areas that I hadn't been trained in. You know, my background was in experimental psychology, and then I decided to do postdoctoral internships to get a clinical license. Then I had about 17 years of clinical practice, and from that, it helped me understand the structure of mind, levels of mind, and how ancient approaches to these ideas have a lot of validity that aren't fully appreciated. And in modern science and modern psychology and neuroscience, there has not been an integration of a consistent model of levels of mind, which these books actually depict.
Now, it seems like your latest two books are more for a general audience than that first one, is what it's sounding like to me.
Yeah, the first one was focused on top scholars who are interested, and people who aren't necessarily scholars themselves, but are interested in these issues and do reading on these issues. And it's a very lively and broad-based group of people.
And how did you find the audience? Like, what did you do to market that book?
Well, again, we are in the baby stages of marketing all these books. And my natural tendency is to delve into the material and try to write it and articulate it, and not so much promotion, publicity, public relations kind of, and the marketing outreach part. And that's something that I'm less than a beginner on, and it's not a natural direction that I would take. So I need some help on that, and Connie is better at that kind of thing. And together we're starting to put together even the basics like website.
And what was your second book then?
The second book was Cool Mind, Warm Heart. The third one was Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union.
Oh, and I see. And you've got a new one after
this
one.
Yeah, that maybe I can have a chance to do some talking about in Writer's Voices soon. And that is called Think Outside the Bang, meaning to think beyond the notion of a inflationary Big Bang that came from nothing and basically just random quantum fields.
Okay, I have another question for you, because you've done four books, yeah, one of which was 600 pages long.
Just about.
In just not that many years, it sounds like since 2008, although I understand this first book you had been thinking about for many years. So I would consider you to be fairly prolific. So could you tell us a little bit about your daily writing schedule or what keeps you motivated? Because nobody's waiting for these books? I mean, you're generating all this enthusiasm to write it and then now learn some things about marketing yourself. So what's getting you to sit down and do this much writing? Because I know a lot of people who want to write have a hard time.
His brain is very busy.
It's fun. That's what motivates me. And I think it's also useful information. And I'm trying to connect some dots that people have not been able to connect very well for thousands of years.
Oh, so part of your motivation is you just want to help people.
Well, yes, yeah. Definitely. And I want to understand it more myself and to be able to express it in a coherent way. And writing seems to be a natural medium for me to do that.
Yeah, it's sort of like...
But it's like writing music. It's the same thing. You know, you want to practice and get better. And when you jump into it, sometimes a good 8 or 10 hours passes by without
really
thinking of anything. And when you get stuck, you know, I go back and rework and refine or read more trigger my thinking with advanced ideas from contemporary writers and try to figuring out what is it that is missing in their conceptualization and then trying to build that into the material I'm writing at the right now. So there's two books I'm working on now. One is about a more holistic understanding of how to do counseling, and another book is about visionaries. And it has to do with identifying maybe 30 or so of the most successful, we could call them visionaries of our time, that are currently living and currently contributing to the direction the world is taking. Some of which is useful, I think, and some of which isn't so useful. So I and some other collaborators, Park Hinsley and hopefully David Scharf, very bright people, skilled in physics and other topics, philosophy, we together are trying to probe into these visionaries' models, their visions, and capturing their essence and showing great respect for their essence of what they're saying, but also maybe pointing to something that's a little bit beyond the horizon of the visions that they
okay,
have.
Okay, so another thing that I'm noticing about you as you're talking about your project is you do, as your wife just said, you do have a busy mind, so you have a lot of things that you're thinking about. For some creative people, what happens is that energy gets dissipated while they're thinking about all their possible projects, and then it's hard to actually follow one through. And what do you think makes the difference that is helping you focus in enough to write your 4 books rather than think about, like, 6 or 8 different books you could be writing and not bring it to completion?
What I personally find most useful is having practiced transcendental meditation for a long time, which gives me the possibility of settling down past all the thinking to a state of inner silence. And that somehow is very freeing and very enjoyable and rejuvenating, but also the net result from that is an integration of thought. When you come back into activity and start thinking about things, somehow there is a more lively basis of holistic understanding or appreciation that informs my reading and writing and inspires me to be able to try to articulate it better.
And I'd just like to add, as an observer, as his wife, seeing someone who really just focuses in on this one topic, you know, when he was writing the big book, and that took several years for him to do. I mean, today, first thing he does is, when he wakes up in the morning, he goes to the computer and turns it on. From the bed.
Well, a lot of people do that, but a lot of people reading news and, you know, visiting different websites. So you're saying when he turns it on, he's actually starting to write?
No, he goes right to the computer, starts writing. If I come home at lunch, he's writing. Usually when I come home in the afternoon, he's writing. And sometimes he writes in the evening till late at night. And I've heard other people say this about him, that he's very one-pointed. In other words, he's just really focused on this particular thing that he's doing. And after each book, something else has spawned from that book that he was working on.
To the next thing. Yeah.
But I get to do fun things like mow the lawn, too.
Well, you do need a balance. You can't spend 10 hours at the computer
Yeah, and the bed and breakfast gives plenty of other things to do, to connect with people and to work, to get the place in order. And
Do you keep copies of your book out in the...
Yeah, we do. We do. And, you know, we sell copies there. People are curious about, you know, we have them kind of just on a windowsill out in our office area, and people get curious about them. And we regularly sell books just at the B&B there.
As part of your marketing strategy, have you thought about doing seminars where you're, you know, offering the knowledge?
We have thought about that, and actually that was really part of our business plan with the B&B. However, we have just been so focused on, again, the writing and some of the other things that we haven't gotten to that part yet. So that's still yet to come.
So there's a lot of aspects. I just want to remind our listeners that we're talking about the book Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union by Robert and Connie Boyer. This is Cheryl Fusco Johnson. You're listening to Writers' Voices, and normally Monica Hadley would be with you today, but I'm subbing for her, and we're at 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So we don't have that much time left. Are there any specific issues about any of the four books you've done, Bob, or this last one that you've done together that you want to share with readers before our time expires?
The time is the problem. Sure, I'd love to keep going and talk about these things. One thing I could say is Heart and Mind was a delightful experience to work with Connie to write, and it was inspiring, and I'm very grateful to her for the opportunity to work with her.
Do you think that there are pitfalls for collaborators? Are there things that you realized could have been issues that you were able to work around, or did nothing like that come up?
I don't think it came up, but partly because we did planning. We had good planning beforehand, before the writing actually began.
What did that entail? Were you just like having breakfast and you'd chat about what you would think?
Yeah.
Or going for a walk and chatting, or did you actually have
conceptually
strategy?
Conceptually about the book, what we wanted in it, what we wanted to include. You know, after we had chosen the movies, the book sort of, it seemed to have sort of write itself in the sense that it kind of laid, there was a map already written. You know, it's like that's doing a strategic plan. Well, once you really know where the roadmap is, you can easily go there. So,
all right. Well, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I think we do have a little time left yet. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd like to just read this one, just one little paragraph, if you don't mind, out of the movie The Queen, just because it's based on a true story. Casablanca, of course, is a fictional story. And
yeah, we talked about the beginning and ending of the book.
Right.
And you started with Casablanca because
right.
that's familiar to a lot of people. And it well illustrated what your point was, that there can be this conflict between heart and mind. And you ended with, what was the name of the movie? Was it actually, it actually is a movie, right? This story about Arjuna.
There have been movies made based on it, but we drew that from the story of the Bhagavad Gita.
And
that
from a literature piece.
Again,
yeah.
because it illustrated your point in,
right.
in a very dramatic
right.
and profound
right.
way.
And so in the middle of the book, we have the movie The Queen, and which is about Queen Elizabeth and when Princess Diana died, and how difficult it was for the country and the Queen's family and Diana's family. And if you recall, back then when that happened, people became very angry with the Queen because they were not showing their love for Diana, or at least that's what their perception was. And
I think there was a little delay maybe in a public statement.
There was. And from her side, it was a private family matter, you know, from the Queen's side. That's how she felt like. And she also felt like she was doing her duty in the way she was handling it.
And Diana's family had requested that too, apparently.
Yeah, so it was really, I found it really interesting that at the end of the movie, you know, she and Tony Blair go off for a walk and they're talking, and the Queen confides that she has never been hated by the public like that before, and it was difficult for her. She explained that duty first, self second, was how she was brought up and all she had ever known. Now, seeing the world has changed, she admits that she needs to modernize and heed the changing attitudes of her subjects. I just felt like that movie was so interesting. I mean, I had compassion for her.
For the queen.
For the queen, of what she was going through.
At the time, people didn't have compassion for her, at the time that Diana died.
But it's also, you know, I mean, we see this in many ways. We see this in our own country with the political situations. Almost every president that is president has some dynamic of going on, who people who hate him and think he's not doing it right. And, you know, we certainly saw that with George Bush. And we've seen it with Clinton, and as far back as we go, we probably see that. But
and how does that relate to the conflict between heart and mind?
Well, it relates in the sense that, number one, sometimes the public reacts in a way, they react on their emotion level towards that president with not knowing all the facts, without using their mind to have maybe a little more compassion of, listen, he's having to make decisions with a lot of information that maybe we don't have. So sometimes I think people get angry about decisions that are made when they don't know the whole story. I mean, I certainly saw that at a microcosm on the city council. You know, people would get kind of annoyed at you for voting one way or another, and then they write a letter to the editor when they don't have all the facts. And so on a national level, it's just it's magnified. And I guess I lost my train of thought there. But, you know, it's just a bigger dynamic. Instead of being on just an individual self level, it's a dynamic of the whole country. And I see that happening. And sometimes leaders make decisions, sometimes I think, without forgetting who the people are, you know, and how they're really living day to day. So the dynamic sometimes goes both ways. Just an interesting comment about, you know, a real life story.
So the reason you chose that movie for this book was because, like we've talked about the other two, just because it shows, did you feel like the queen was doing things more in her head, you know, like more following rationally, and people didn't see the connection to her heart?
I think that's probably true. You know, she, again, duty first for her. And so she was acting a lot in her mind and doesn't show a lot of emotion, you know, and the people wanted her to show emotion. So she was maybe a little much too much in her mind and needed to show a little more heart. Other people who loved Diana and the public were so in their heart that they couldn't use their mind to see what the queen was going through.
And understand her position on it.
Yeah.
And this movie was picked as a counterpoint to the classic story of Romeo and Juliet, in which both the families of Romeo and Juliet were very emotional, had a pattern of emotional passion dominating their judgment for years, and constantly fighting, and it ended up into a great tragedy of loss of life.
Yeah, so that was one of the tragedies you decided to include. Could you give us, like, maybe your top three tips on how people can integrate heart and mind? I think we have just enough time for...
Well, there's two simple ones.
Okay, two simple ones are good.
And these are the themes that I think are most important in all my writing and that I've tried to focus on in my life, and that is development of consciousness and development of communication skills.
And the way that people develop consciousness and communication skills?
Well, use technologies that develop consciousness, that allow the mind to expand, and do that reliably, and find something that articulates clearly some very practical skills that lead to improvements in your daily interaction and communication with people.
And another step might be to read your book,
yeah,
Heart and Mind, A Perfect Union. And I want to thank you for joining us. With me today were Robert and Connie Boyer, the authors of this book. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very
very
much.
Good
it
job.
Was fun.
Thank you.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.